this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy. Be sure to check us out on Facebook and our YouTube channel. Please subscribe and check out our great sponsors, Your Dolce Vita, Italy Rooting, and Abitivo Casa. And I have a great guest today from California, Anna Riggs. So welcome, Anna. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I think it's something special.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, I'm not that special, believe me. My wife could attest to that. No, actually, she thinks this is this is a big deal. So, so the first question I have for you is, you know, where is your Italian family from originally in Italy?
I am from Bari.
Ah, that's me too.
What part of Bari?
Torito.
Okay, I'm from Celle del Campo. It's not too far from Torito, really, as far as I can remember.
Now, are you from there originally? Were you born there?
Yes, I was born 1941.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I was born there in Celle. And years later, my father wanted to move to the United States. That was his big dream. But at the time, the quota to come to the United States was 15 years. So a friend of his told him that in Venezuela, the quota was shorter. So he set up to go to Venezuela. He didn't have any money for the fare. So my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, gave him the money. She said, go ahead. If that's your dream, do it. So he went there for 2 years. And then he called us after 2 years, which was the rest of the family. And in fact, it was funny because when he left, my mother was pregnant. And when he put our names in the quota, when he got to Venezuela, he didn't know what it was going to be. So he says, well, I'm going to take a chance and put that Leonardo. And if it's a girl, then I say they made a mistake and it's Leonarda. But as it turned out, it was a boy. So altogether, we were there. We were there 4 years, and my father, of course, 6 years. And then our turn came to come to the United States, and that's what we did in 1955. We left Italy in 51 for Venezuela and came to the United States in 55.
Well, see, now that's almost the same as my uncle, because my oldest uncle was left there by my grandparents. So he stayed in Torito, and my cousins were all born there. And they came about the same time, only he went to Canada first.
A lot of them did.
Yes, yes. And he spent, I think, 4 or 5 years in Canada with the family, and they probably got to America just around the same time as you did, 54, 55, something like that.
Yep.
So you were about 10 when you went to Venezuela then, yeah?
I was 10 years old, but I tell you, those 10 years, I have such great memories, such great memories. I very nostalgic when I talk about it.
Well, that's why we're here, so we could get some of that nostalgia direct from the source. So you remember now, you don't remember the war at all, though, do you? You were too young for that.
No, right. I was too young. Yes.
But did your dad and your mom talk about the war? You know,
my dad did. Kind of funny. My dad used to work for the Italian government in Italy. He was on the payroll, you know, for the city workers. And sometimes he had a few enemies because they went according to how long they worked, and that's how they got paid. And of course, some of the employees, we need more, well, we did 1 hour more. My father would say that was his job. And sometimes he wasn't too popular, but he was okay.
So what do you remember about the hometown in Italy?
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, me and my sister, we went to a Catholic school. But the Catholic school was not in Celje. We had to take the train car to, it wasn't even, it was regarded as Bari, but it really wasn't. It was an outside, on the outskirts of Bari. We had to pass Carbonara, and then we got to the convent where we went to school. And lots of memories from that school. I mean, I dream about him all the time. As old as I am, I still dream about him. First, we took the train car, and my mother would make us a lunch, very, very, how you say it? I got good lunch, it was for us. And when we got to school, everybody wanted our lunch. And it's just like I hear here in America, the same thing. They would want our lunch. But anyway, that's a small part of it. The school had beautiful, beautiful orchards. Beautiful orchards that the nuns would take us there, and it was so, I don't even know how to describe it, enlightening, beautiful, peaceful, a lot of things. And in fact, to this day, I remember the one song that the nuns would teach us. And I sang it to my children, even though they didn't understand what I was saying. And it was, Ove duto il fior di mandorlo, biancheggia sulla collina, la fragranza delle mammole, quante gioie mi ha dato al cuore. Primavera, primavera si avvicina. Dentro il nuvolo di fior, su cantiamo piccola schiera, alla nuova primavera, su cantiamo piccola schiera, alla nuova primavera. And that's the song.
That's great.
Kind of lost my voice a little being older, and but
Oh,
it's
no,
been
you
good.
sounded wonderful.
But it's just one of the memories. And I went back. I go to back quite frequently. And the first time I went back, I cried because they needed the room for building projects, mostly apartments. So they cut down. When I went to the school, it did not have an orchard. The church that they had there had been cut down to a small chapel. And the actual rooms that they had there now, they were maybe five or six. And the school was huge. That school was huge.
So that's unusual for Italy to do that. But I guess if they were, I guess as Bari was growing as a city, I guess they just, overtook the suburbs. I mean, we were the first time in Bari just last year, September. I had never been there before, so I didn't know what to expect. To they took us to when we went to Torito, they grow the almonds there, and I heard you mention the almonds. I don't get a lot of Italian, but I heard the almond part. So that's sad that they took all of that down.
Oh, they did. It made me cry because the beauty of it, as I imagine it being a child, and I imagined it would be the same, but it wasn't, but everything changes, I guess,
Yeah, and and as you're talking about it, I'm almost picturing it in my mind, what it must have looked like. But there's no more nuns anymore either to take care of the place, I suppose. Now, do you have family there still at all?
I have many cousins, but only one first cousin. The other ones are distant cousins, but one, she is the daughter of my father's sister, and she's the only one. And when I go, of course, I always treat her. This is something because she lives in Monopoly. My father was from Monopoly. And so when I go and see her and I take her to a restaurant, they don't go out to restaurants. It's a small town, not Monopoly itself, but where she lives, in the community, they don't go out to eat much, and it's such a joy for her that I take her out to lunch. She just is in heaven.
So for people who haven't gone back, and some feel that when they go to Italy, they're looking at Rome and Florence and places like that. Explain to everybody what's the difference between food in Italy and food in America.
Ah, now you're talking. Well, you mean Italian food in America or just American food in general?
No, Italian food in America, because we all know that most of it's we're not eating really Italian food. We're eating Italian American food, right?
Right. Well, for American people, the food has to be, how you say it, has to be reimagined, kind of, and that's for the taste of American people. I mean, I can say that for my husband, myself, they have different palates, different tastes, and so the American people, like, for example, I have a friend that has an Italian deli, right? And she makes her sauce, that she puts sugar and carrots. If my grandmother had ever heard of that, she would die, just die. Sugar? Carrots? What in the heck is that? No, it's completely different. Now, I live in a suburb of LA, it's called Santa Clarita. And we have only, well, we have like five Italian restaurants, but only two are authentic out of the five because they all cater to American palates. We eat spicy, a lot of spice. And all of our foods are with spices rather than putting gravy and all sort of junk in it. So the two restaurants that we have that are good, we enjoy, yes. But it is different.
Well, yeah, and what we found is, to your point, and we were watching Italian cooking shows where we were over there. They use very few ingredients a lot of times. If they're making like let's say a pasta dish or something like that, maybe a little white wine, and a little
Yeah,
onion
very
or
simple.
garlic, and then parsley, and that's kind of it. There's
I've been teaching my children, especially my grandchildren, even the spouses of my granddaughters, they want to learn my sauce because I keep telling them it's a very simple recipe, very few ingredients. You hear of these people cooking a pasta sauce for 4 or 5 hours the whole day. Are they crazy? There's no need for it. But I tell you where that originates from. You see, in Italy, we didn't have as fresh items that we have here in the United States. So they would make tomato paste. They would can their tomato sauce. So for them, in order to cook something, the tomato paste had to really cook a long time, and that's where they brought it back to United States, which now you don't have to. In fact, I don't think I ever used tomato paste. There's no need for it. If you just use crushed tomatoes, a few ingredients, the sauce is perfect.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
But
well, and it's interesting you say that, because where we did find something similar to what we have here was in Naples. The Naples ragu with the meat sauce and all of that was, they cook it for 8 hours. I mean, it's cooking all day, and they have the meat in it. But my father's mom, she was from Naples, and I got her recipe from my cousin, and it was very few ingredients. But what was interesting about it is she didn't put carrots in it, but she put celery in it. No sugar. God, sugar is like, I don't know where that comes from, but yeah, I know people want to get the acidity out and all of that kind of stuff. But and the other thing that I found over there, I'm not a big fish person, but the fish over there is just phenomenal. I
Oh.
never tasted anything like it.
You know, when I go back to Italy, and I now have been staying to a, in a B&B in a town, San Giorgio is called. And let me tell you, there's a whole row of fish markets, and every day, fresh fish. Raw, cooked, baked, whatever. I love fish. Love it.
And they don't need refrigeration or anything, because everything's gone by the end of the day, right?
Exactly. They shop every day. Every day they shop. Of course, we're spoiled here. We don't have to shop every day, but fish, you almost, I don't buy fish days ahead. Whenever I want it here, I just go and buy it fresh.
So now, when you're over there, did your parents speak dialect? I'm assuming they did when they
Oh,
spoke to you in Italian, right?
yes. So, yeah. So, my friends, especially one of my friends, she says, well, because I speak Spanish, I speak Italian, I speak English, I know some Latin. And then she says to me, she reminds me, she says, well, how about your dialect? I said, oh, I keep forgetting about it because my father, well, that's another long story. My father was educated by, he had a friend, his father was in the service, in the army, and he had a good friend, and this good friend became, I'm going to say it in Italian, it's the only way, il presidente del tribunale a Venezia. Big shot, big shot. So being that they were friends, my grandfather had him promise that he would educate his children. And that's exactly what he did. My father went to private schools when we were of age, me and my sister. We went to private schools in Ravenna. We traveled to Ravenna. So we traveled to Ravenna. Of course, we only knew dialect. Okay. So the first few days of school were kind of cruel, you know. We didn't know the Italian language, we only knew dialect. So we were there 1 year and we learned it very, very good. So on the way back to Italy, I mean to Uccelli, my father on the train said to us, if you utter one word of dialect, I will beat you blue. Oh my God. He said, no, we can't do that. And then he turned to my mother. He says, and if you allow them to speak dialect, you will get it too. So when we got to our hometown, our schoolmates didn't understand what we were saying. So we would make fun of it. They would make fun of us and they would say, Anna, well, my nickname is Nina, but anyway, they would say, Nina speaks, Nina parla un rutian, because Italiano to them sounded like rutian was the clay pot that you ate in. Tian, you know, it's dialect. And they couldn't say Italiano, so they would say, Nina parla un rutian. So they couldn't understand us. We could understand them, obviously, but they couldn't understand. And it was pretty hard for a year, you know, because we had to teach them, you know, what we would, our Italian that we were speaking. They didn't know it. So, yeah. I could speak my dialect if I want to, but of course, you know, since my father imposed that rule, but my father would speak Italian to me, and my mother would speak dialect. And my grandmother obviously would speak dialect too. So, yeah, I know the Barese dialect, and let me tell you, I have a video of a young girl trying to learn the Barese dialect and this guy trying to teach her. It is really hysterical, you know. It's just.
Oh, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see that. And the reason I asked is because we spend most of the time on my mother's mom, and I always thought they were speaking Italian,
Yeah, of
but they
course.
weren't. They were speaking Barese. What did I know at
Yeah,
7, 8, 9 years old, right?
exactly.
I was only later that I found out that they were speaking Barese and not true, not Italian per se. But I always remember my uncle Dominic, well, my mother's uncle Dominic actually, Zimin Gooch.
Mingooch.
Zimin Gooch. And I thought that was I had no idea that his name was Dominic till you said
I have a good friend that to this day we call him Mingooch.
it.
How do you get Mingooch from Domenico? Tell me.
I have no idea. I have no idea. But my mother's aunt Raquel was Z Raquel, so that was close. And the funny story about that, my mother was supposed to be named Raquel Caroline, Raquel Carolina, but my grandmother had a fight with
Uh-oh.
Aunt Rachel, sister-in-law, so Raquel was still in there, but it became Caroline Rachel instead of Rachel Caroline. So you still had the middle name, but the first name changed. But and that was the other thing when we were back in Bari, and I heard them, sp speaking the dialect. And just recently, somebody from over there sent me, I don't know if it's everywhere, but in Torito they have on December 23rd they have the Night of the Bakers,
Oh.
and they, I don't know the significance yet. I can only guess that maybe the bakers worked all day Christmas Eve or all night the night before Christmas Eve so they could have Christmas off. But it started out with somebody walking down the street and he's shouting very loud in Barese. And I said, That's what my grandmother sounded like. That's what I remember my grandmother sounding like when I heard that. So that was a lot of fun. So now you said your father always wanted to come to America now. So what did he do when he got here, since he was in city business back in Italy?
When the Americans came, then of course he became a prisoner, and they put him in the kitchen to cook. And in fact, he was so good that he was very how you say it, easygoing, a nice guy. So they sent him home at night instead of being in the prison, because by then, he had two girls, and a wife. So anyway, so he learned how to cook there. So when he came here, first he, I'll never forget it, he worked in a factory where they slaughtered chickens, and packaged them and so on. He didn't stay there long. And then he, a little bit at a time, he started working in restaurants as a cook, then became a chef, then got his own restaurant, and became a chef in his own restaurant. Because I forgot, because in Venezuela, that's what he did. He worked for an American company, well, an American hotel restaurant, Monte Carlo it was called, and he worked there as a cook. So he had the experience. And then of course, from Italy, Venezuela, when he came here, he was good to be a cook, a chef actually. I have a picture here somewhere around here of him with the chef hat. He was good. He was good, and that's what he did until he couldn't work anymore. That's what he did.
And that's funny. My uncle, he guarded Italian prisoners in Africa when he was in the war. And he used to go eat with the Italian prisoners because they were getting spaghetti to eat, and the Americans were getting stuff in cans. So he used to go cook with the Italians and eat with them. Well, that's a neat story. Yeah, that's really, really great. And that was in, now you went direct to California, or?
Yes, we came directly to California. Never forget it, because we had an aunt here, and she lived in not too far from Santa Clarita. It's called Pacoima. And at that time, this little town, Pacoima, was really, really nice. Now you don't want to enter it, but at that time it was really nice. So we stayed with her for about a month, and then we rented a duplex in Burbank, not too far from here either. And then we stayed there for about a year. And then we bought a house in LA. And no sooner after that, my mom and dad got divorced. He went to school at nighttime to learn English. And there was someone else, there was a woman from Colombia that was also learning English and also looking for a husband. And so there, that was it. So I became the oldest of the family. I had to go to work.
So
But,
how old were you when that happened?
well, between 15 and 16. But what I did do is I did go to school the full day, and and then went to work during the night. I worked. In fact, they got a special permit for me because I was so young. I worked for a bank. I was a check processor. I would go to school about 7:10 in the morning, get out of school about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I would drive to LA, 4th and Main, I'll never forget it. Got there at 4 o'clock and worked until midnight.
Wow.
And then went home, had to do my homework, get up and go to school at 7:10 again.
Yeah, now they don't
So
want to work 3 hours a night. That's too much.
but you know, with my mom being by herself, and she had a good job. She worked for Bendy Camp's Bakery, and she had a good job, but she still needed assistance, you know. And of course, you know, I gave her my paycheck. She gave me $5 a week for spending money, and but she was able to build on her house, you know, make it better. So it helped. It helped.
Sure. What bank did you work for?
Ah, it was called Security National Bank. And then it became another bank. I forgot. It combined with another bank, you know, and it became one bank, and then it changed again. So, but it was a good bank. I'll never forget it. I made $260 a month. And that was what, 1958, 59, somewhere around there.
Yeah, and the reason I asked because I worked for Chemical Bank in New York City, and then later I left and I went to Chase, and then Chemical merged with Chase, and Chase merged with J.P. Morgan and Bank One and all of that kind of stuff, and we inherited Jamie Dimon. But yeah, I started there in 1972, and I made $115 a week, and I took a cut in pay. Big cut in pay because before that I was loading trucks for Pepsi Cola, and I was making $200 a week in 1971. I was like a millionaire.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah. We thought it was a lot of money. Yeah, definitely.
Well, yeah, when you think about how cheap everything was back
Sure.
then, so I
Sure,
guess it's
sure.
all relative, but
Exactly.
nothing like today.
Exactly.
My parents, when they bought their house in Queens, it was $15,500 in 1953. And
Well, the house that I mean that rebought, what was it? It was like $2,000 when my
wow.
mother bought the house. Yeah. And then I remember selling it. Ah, a lot more.
Especially in California, I'm sure. And now, who knows what it's worth now?
You know, like us here. We bought our house brand new in Santa Clarita, and we paid $260,000. And now they're selling, you know, about $1.2, $1.3 million. I can't believe it. It's just mind-boggling.
I know it is. It is. So now I want to, because I know you're a member of the Italian Catholic Club in Santa Clarita. So what do you guys do there?
Well, we actually did a little bit of everything. We are going to fold because there's a lot of Italians in Santa Clarita, believe it or not, a big percentage, but they are not, their heart is not in Italy. And as hard as we tried, we would have monthly meeting with dinners, you know, cooked especially, you know, from body. And we would cook beautiful dinner. And A lot of times we would have entertainment. We'd have Christmas party. In fact, we'd have La Befana. We would do La Befana on 6th January. We'd do the St. Joseph's table, which nobody does here in Santa Clarita. Now they're not going to have it anymore because we're folding. But we did Italian lessons. I had classes that I would do. We would play bingo. We'd go to the casinos. We did a lot, but it just wasn't enough. People are just not interested. You know, they want to be part of the American culture. And it saddens me that they don't have that much pride in being Italian.
I know, isn't that sad? And that's why I do some of this. And in fact, I just applied today to the Italian club here. I was never a member of an Italian club. My brother's older than me. He just joined one in Florida. And I said to my wife, I said, they have a Monday dinner for $10 and they go on trips and they have the fair and they're pretty vibrant, these guys. And they have a pretty good membership, and it's less than a couple of miles from me. It's right down the road, basically. But that's why I do this, because I fear, we're losing our identity. The generations after us, they're
It
not connected to
exactly,
Italy. They're not connected.
exactly, exactly, exactly. We're losing our identity. You know, I belong to a group of Italians in LA, in Los Angeles. They have, I don't know if you have, it's St. Peter's Church, and they have a Casa Italiana, which is the hall, we have everything next to the church. And I lost my thought, but anyway, I belong to there are a lot of societies, as all the different saints, and they're mostly from southern Italy and mostly from the Puglia re region, which that's where Bari is from. And there is one saint name, it's called San Trifone. It happens to be my maternal grandfather's name. So I'm pretty loyal to that. So I belong to that. I support the other societies in different ways, but San Trifone is the one that I belong to. So, and that's the one I go to stay connected. In fact, we just, after 3 years of COVID, we just had our New Year's dinner dance, which is phenomenal what they do. Just beautiful. Yes. We really enjoyed ourselves this year. So
Oh, that's good.
that's the only one I belong to now, because it's like beating my head against the wall because I can't get through people, I just can't. I even have a neighbor whose name happens to be my mother's name, Domenica. She was born maybe 2 miles from my hometown, and come to find out, we lived in LA when we rented, when I first got married, we rented a place, and she only lived a few blocks from me. We just found this out in the last couple of years or so. But what's sad is she led a very poor life. I think we all did. Not, I mean, I didn't suffer. I had food and clothing. We weren't rich, but we were okay. But evidently, she suffered more than I did. Let's put it that way. And it's completely, she put Italy completely out of her mind, like it never existed, like she never. And I just cannot believe it. And in fact, She became a board member of our club, but yet her heart was not in it. She did it because of her name. And then after a while, she lost interest because it was what I was trying to do is too Italian. And I had to do a lot more American. Well, that's why we opened an Italian club.
Oh, exactly.
She lost interest, you know, it's just too much Italian. No, not for me. But that's one example. I mean, she was even born there. You would think she would be more interested, but it's no different than other Italians that have Italian surnames. And some of them were even born in Italy that I know that live here in Santa Clarita and don't care to do anything about it.
Yeah, that's interesting. This place over here has they have indoor bocce courts, so
Oh.
you can't beat that.
Well, there is a place in LA, another Italian club I don't belong to because. Anyway, I don't belong to it. They have bocce place there that they play. But those are the only two. That one and the Casa Italiana are the only two. At first, I didn't think I was going to join because it's called the Garibaldina Club, and it's been known to be mostly elder people. Really, really older people. But now I'm thinking, at 82, I think I'm one of them too. Oh, you never know. Never say never. So.
Well, I keep telling my wife that she's elderly, not me. She's younger than she's younger. She's like 5, 6 years younger than me, something like that. So, but that's our little thing. Well, Anna, this has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate it, and I love talking about this stuff. And I circulate this stuff to for the same reason that you want to keep the clubs alive, is to get the young people interested and make them recognize our heritage or want to know our heritage.
And it's such a rich heritage. It's got so much to offer. And all the famous people that came from Italy, it's just, I don't know, you can do only so much.
Well, yeah, and my friend Frank DiPiero does a little thing, the Italian American moment, and he highlights, just regular common day, Italian Americans, and he just recently did a piece on the I don't recall his name now. You probably know, the man who built the Watts Towers. And
Oh yes. Oh
I had no
yes, it's
idea he
here
was
in
an Italian
LA.
American. I had no
Yes,
idea. Yeah.
yes. How
And
about the
do you know he was on the cover of Sgt. Pepper's?
No, that I
Yes,
don't know.
he's on the cover of Sgt. Pepper's.
There's also a famous Italian place called the Forestiere Gardens. And that's quite unique. It's in Fresno. It's a Sicilian man that built an underground living quarters all by himself. It is the most fascinating thing. You wouldn't believe it. No air conditioning, no heating, all clay, made out of clay and stone. And yet it's just amazing what this guy did. And his name, it's named after him, of course. Forestiere was his name, so now they're called the Forestiere Gardens, and the family just could not afford to stay there, so they gave it to the city.
And yeah, I think I saw that on television one time. I think I recall seeing
Quite
one of those
unique.
shows where they show our homes and all of that. I think I recall seeing that.
Well, I took a group, the Italian club. We went there, and they were all amazed how one man with no modern tools, just it's amazing what he did. Just amazing.
I know it kind of blows you away when you see stuff like that. It really
Yeah.
does. Well, thanks again. I appreciate it.
Well, I enjoyed it, talking to you.
All right, thanks again.